entertainment, social dynamics, and personal relationships, friends, lovers, and family, to field questions and insights about the continuous question of what does love have to do with it? Well, just about everything. So tonight we are going to be talking with a blessed being out of San Francisco area. Her name is Lisa Kotecki. She is a marketer and avant-garde playwright. Lisa is going to be sharing with us her experience and the journey of love in the 21st century. Internet dating, marketing, and soul searching will all be up in the conversation, talking about her one of her plays, Funnel of Love. So stay tuned. It's sure to be a humorous and delightful conversation. Emily Rose is joining me as co-host tonight, and we're going to start this show first with a Pentatonix's Can't Sleep Love.
Yeah. Tell me, am I going crazy? Tell me, have I lost my mind?
Yeah.
Am I just afraid of loving? Or am I not the loving kind?
Yeah.
Kissing in the moonlight, movies on a late night, getting old. I've been there, done that, supposed to be high, better just go. Somebody wake up my heart, light me up, set fire to my soul, yeah. Cause I can do it anymore.
That was certainly amazing, and that was a suggestion by our guest, Lisa Kotecki. And again, I am joined by Emily Rose, who is also the co-host on Love in the 21st Century. So if you're tuning in right now, you are listening to 90.1 KZFR Chico, where we talk about love in all its many facets. And tonight we are remotely being joined by Lisa Kotecki in San Francisco. Lisa, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hi, Lisa. I loved your song choice.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, both of you. I'm really excited to be here.
Excited to have you.
Absolutely. So Lisa is a playwright in San Francisco, and I had the pleasure of meeting her in a spiritual gathering. And so it was really awesome to bring my two worlds together, which is sort of my social service of talking about love on the airwaves, and meeting Lisa and having the opportunity to talk about a play, which, you know, I lovingly put you in my phone as Lisa Love, because you just spread that, you know, that from your heart so strongly. And that's actually the character that you write about in your playwright, right?
Yes, her name is Lisa Lovejoy, and the way I would best describe her is like a Navy SEAL in service to love. Yes, she's very diligent, she's very strict, she's very black and white. There's a right and wrong way to do things, and she's going to show you the right way to find love no matter what.
How fantastic.
But you don't necessarily believe that in real life? There's like more of a fluidity to things? Is that the case? Or is it more like black and white? Is she an example of the belief system you...
You know, it's interesting you asked me that. I feel like I created her because she was a more, like a lot of character work, she was definitely an aspect of myself I wanted to explore. So there is a part of me that's, you know, very, you know, that can be very black and white and direct. And there is another character that flip-flops, and I would call her more of a, you know, I don't give her a name the way Lisa Lovejoy has a name. I just call her Lisa. And she's more open and vulnerable and expressive. And so it's very two extreme parts of myself that I'm exploring on stage with the audience and playing with. But, you know, Lisa Lovejoy has taught me a lot about love, in that it doesn't have to be so serious and heavy, that it, you know, even in her, you know, more strict and straightforward demeanor, there is a playfulness to her. And so she's definitely taught me to play. She's definitely taught me to, you know, be clear on your values and never settle for less and just go for exactly what you want. There's a lot of lessons she taught me.
So the name of your play is actually Funnel of Love, right?
Yes, correct.
And it is a one woman experience.
Correct.
So I know a little bit about the background of what inspired the story of the Funnel of Love, but could you give our listeners an idea of where the Funnel of Love came from and how it sort of pulls from your life experience to bring a show to the stage?
Sure. So I've been a performer, gosh, since a really young age, since 8. But the on-stage storytelling probably began about 3 years ago. And so I've been exploring a lot of my personal life story in a public setting, which honestly I highly recommend for anybody who's feeling called to do it. The Bay Area has a huge scene out here for storytellers. And it's just a really beautiful process, because telling your story really teaches you more about yourself, and then the audience just loves it. It's just a beautiful way to explore artistically. So nonetheless, I was doing the whole online dating thing, and this, you know, it's different. And I was just getting really fed up, and my roommate said, you know, you should get on Tinder. And I said, no way, I am not touching Tinder. It is a hookup site. That's not what I'm after. I totally get if other people are after that, and I completely respect them, but that's just not what I want. And then he said, well, you're a marketer. This is what you do for a living. Why don't you turn it into some stats? Like, take some stats, track yourself, figure out what your conversion rates are, because this is your life. And it was just this sort of completely different shift in perspective. And I thought, okay, what could hurt? I'll do a couple week experiment on it. And so I started tracking, you know, how many people that I was matching with, and out of those, how many were approaching me in conversations, how many people were asking me out. And I have a writing group, and I thought, hey, I'm going to send this email out to everybody to show them how you can hack the online dating system. And they said, that's not an email, Lisa, that's a show. So that was the birth of my show, was just sort of playing around and having a good time and having fun with, you know, how can I just turn this into a game? And again, you know, love isn't necessarily a game, but there, I mean, it's lighthearted, it's expansive, it's joyful. And when I was able to tap into that, it completely revolutionized how I approached online dating.
Well, actually, Tinder is kind of has that game element to it too. Swipe apps in general, right, have that hooky game kind of feeling when you play them.
Totally. But you know what I find interesting about them, Tinder in specific, is that you don't have a lot of data. So it's kind of like when you're standing in a room with somebody and you go, oh, that person over there, he or she looks really hot. And you don't have anything to go on other than their looks. And so it's really interesting how much you can vibe about a person and sense just from their picture. I mean, there are people I would go, I would never go out with this person. For some reason, I'm going to swipe right. And we would match, and I would go out with them, and they were so my type. And I just instinctively knew from the picture. So it's really, yeah, I find Tinder fascinating.
Can you explain for some of our listeners what Tinder is? Because I even don't really have that great of an understanding, but it's sort of a, you know, a new phenomenon in our world and certainly in the dating world. So could you kind of give us a little snapshot of what it is?
Sure. So Tinder is an app that only works from your phone, and once you download the app, you upload pictures of yourself. And then you get, like, I think it's 350 characters to write a really quick bio. So you're not going to be able to give people a lot from your bio. It's really going to be heavily relied on how you look.
It's got to be a good picture then.
Pardon?
It's got to be a good picture then.
Exactly. You've got a few pictures to just give them the essence of who you are. And in there you also have filters. You can say, I want to what you want to see in your stream. So you could define it by age. For instance, you could say, I only want men, if you're in your 30s, from 30 to 40 or 32 to 38, whatever your age range is. And then you can also then further narrow down and say, I only want people that are 10 miles away from where I live, or even as much as 100 miles away from where I live. And so the app is geo-local. So it's based on where you are. So if I go to Texas right now, it's going to match me with people that are in, you know, 15 miles away from me in Texas, not 15 miles away from where I live in California. So once you have all your filters set up, then you start to see people in your news, in your stream, and you swipe right, which means that you like them. You swipe left if you don't like them and you want to pass. But
in other words,
your
left thumb gets really, really tired.
Yeah, right. Totally. But that's a good thing, because I'll get to the science why that's a good thing in a minute. Actually, I'll put my marketing hat on here. But when you're swiping right, there's a couple more steps. So you swipe right, but that's not enough. They have to swipe right too. And once they swipe right, then you match, and then you're allowed to text each other. So that's another way. It's a little different than, say, OkCupid or Match or some of the other sites out there. You can't just start, you know, messaging people like crazy just because you're attracted to them.
You can't even browse people, like, I mean, past a certain point unless they match you back, right?
Yeah, totally, totally. You know what? It'll keep on giving you matches in your area. Every once in a while I've had it where it's gone, okay, there's no more matches here, and that might last for like 10 minutes, and then more matches show up.
Right.
You guys can't even begin the communication unless both people say yes, right, which I think is also kind of cool. You can easily unmatch them. So if I think Joe Blow is hot, and then he thinks I am, and all of a sudden he goes, I don't know about her, and he unmatches, I just lost the conversation, or vice versa. He starts being a creep, and I'm like, dude, creepy, I'm out. He can no longer contact me.
You want to know something creepy? My brother lives in New York, and his old roommate is a coder, and so he created a code that swipes right on everyone.
So basically,
if a girl swipes right on him, he automatically is going to have a conversation with her, because basically, I think that he wasn't getting a lot of right swipes, and so he just made it, you know, himself more easily accessible to all.
That strategies. Is so funny.
It's hilarious.
I think a lot of guys do that. You know, and I joke about that at the beginning of my show, in that, you know, for women, it's more of a pull marketing process, and that we're pulling people towards us, we're drawing people in, we've got more options than we know what to do with, right? So our biggest question is, like, who do I want to go home with tonight? Because I've got so many options. And for men, it's more of a push marketing process. They're, you know, pushing themselves out into the marketplace. And there's an expression in marketing called the pray and spray method, where you just like put out your message to as many people as possible, hoping and praying somebody will.
I feel like it's a very masculine name for that.
Yeah, so it's like that's the difference between women and men, is it's like more pull versus push. So yeah, you know, there's definitely code out there, so men can hack the system and have it work more in their favor. But we definitely have a leg up as women. We've got if you're a heterosexual woman, I can't speak for same sex experiences, but as a heterosexual woman, you've got a total leg up.
So I'm just curious, really quick. I don't want to derail the conversation too much, but have you read Aziz Ansari's new book called Modern Romance?
You know, it is so on my list, especially after the show. I think like 5 people have sent me that book link saying I should buy it.
It's awesome. I think you're going to love it. It's all about everything that you're talking about.
Nice.
Yeah. So Lisa, let's talk a bit about the incorporation of storytelling with marketing and the show Funnel of Love, and how you've talked a little bit about that, but how you really pull in your marketing experience to shape the show.
Yeah, so, I started to approach everything with the mindset as a marketer. And so as a marketer, you are, it's essentially a big filtering process. You have a message you want to put out there, and you want to draw in the right people that are drawn to your specific message. So your ideal client, for lack of a better word, isn't everybody. It's only a small subset of the population. And I started to think about, I totally started to think about dating as a business. So then I thought, McDonald's, for example, you would think, what kind of business are they in? And you'd probably respond, they're in the burger and fries business. Wrong. They're actually in the real estate business. So I started to use that parallel and go, okay, what business am I in when I'm online dating? I'm actually not in the business of going out on dates. I'm actually in the business of getting people off the app. I'm in the business of having text conversations that drive me and the other person to go off the app. So I started finding these kinds of parallels and then making jokes about them and writing about them. What I said is actually part of what I integrate into my show. And I started thinking about dating as a funnel and a pipeline. And so when you're in marketing, you think about, what are all my different channels where I could attract people? And so it's like, okay, there's your friends. If your friend is one channel, your meetup.com might be another, OkCupid might be another, Tinder might be another, going out to clubs might be another. And out of all those options, you start to dwindle down and go like, I don't want to go to a club. That's not really where my right match is going to be. And in marketing, you don't want to have too many channels. You want to have maybe 2 or 3 you really focus on, you know them really well. And so I went, okay, Tinder, OkCupid, and my friends. Those are my 3 channels. And I started to then think, okay, out of those channels, then what's the next step? And so I started to create like a pipeline for myself. And this is so funny to talk about because that's why I did it in the show. But, from there, then I started to approach, okay, how many times that I'd mentioned this, like how many times did I swipe right? And out of those swipes, then how many people matched? I actually didn't count how many times I swiped right. I just got how many matches. So I took matches over a week, and here's like a snapshot of a pipeline. So out of all those right swipes, I got, I think, 50 matches. 23 contacted me, which is about 40% of the people. Out of the 23 that contacted me, 7 asked me out. So that's like a 30% rate. So that means like I could predict that 1 out of 3 men that initiate conversations would ask me out on a date. And then out of that, I decided to say yes to 4 of them. So it's a little over half. And then out of the 4, I'm looking at the bigger numbers. So I had 50 matches, 4 of them I went out on dates with. It was something like a 7% total conversion rate. And put another way, that's like 100 out of 100 people. If I were to talk to 100 people on the street, only 7 would result in a date. And you're going, oh my God, I've talked to 100 people to get only 7 people to date. But then I started to compare it to my marketing world, where a 3% conversion rate is over the top. Like if I could get like 7% conversion rate, if I go to a client, I'm like, look, we're going to run this digital campaign and I'm going to guarantee no matter what, you're going to get 7% conversion rate. I would charge whatever I wanted. I mean, that's astronomical in the marketing world. And so just having that information started to flip how I approach, like, the results in online dating. And frankly, you don't want everybody saying yes to you anyways, because half of them or majority of them are kind of freaks. So
that's what I was thinking, right? Like when you were talking about more options for women, you know, it's like, theoretically, right?
If numbers were the only thing that mattered. Right. You're just blowing my mind right now with all this marketing information and this whole outlook on the dating world. It's it is definitely a lighthearted approach to the whole dating game. Something that you were mentioning was that when you went onto the app, that you weren't, that your goal was really about getting people off the app, not necessarily the dates. And I'm wondering, like, from the perspective of how many people get onto apps like that, or, you know, whatever kind of website, you know, seeking out relationship, that it seems to be that the goal is actually in the relationship or in finding love. And I'm curious how you came to the decision of, you know, of kind of taking it a few steps back in terms of, like, not even
the looking initial conversation.
Yeah, like, yeah, not even looking at the date, but just, you know, kind of getting to the conversation, because I think that in that there's a real token of insight from people that are looking for love.
It's totally genius.
Yeah. So how did I get to that? I think, again, it was putting on my marketing cap of each. It's like when you look at a pipeline, you have a process. You only have one objective for each. You have an end goal, but then you ask yourself, what's the one step the person has to take to get to this next objective? What's the next step they have to take to get to this objective? What's the next step? And so I started backtracking and going, okay, I really want a lifelong partner, but that's not going to happen if all I'm doing is hanging out on a phone. We have to get off the phone. And so how do we get off the phone? And so I just, you know, I started reverse engineering and thinking, it's one step at a time. And then it started expanding and going, okay, well, then once we get off the phone, the game still isn't, is this a lifelong partner? Then the next game is, do we even want to go out on a second date? So right. I haven't even gotten to this part in the show, but I call it closing the deal. It's like the sales conversation. You guys are dancing with each other, figuring out, you know, are you really the person you said you were online? Are you the person I kind of felt you were when we were texting? You know, is there a match? Is there not a match? Where do we meet? Where are my deal breakers met? You know, is it still a green light? Like, you're just, yeah, every single step of the way, I just found if you could just breathe and not make it about the final destination, but just that one specific goal, it'll eventually get you where you need to go. And it'll also help you not overlook major flaws, because you're so committed to being in a relationship. You totally blind yourself to, like, this guy or girl is really a freak or not the right person for you.
So if you're just tuning in, you are listening to 90.1 KZFR Chico, and this is Love in the 21st Century. My name is Tammy, and Emily Rose is joining us to interview Lisa Kotecki out of San Francisco area, an avant-garde playwright, with her recent piece Funnel of Love. And, you know, Lisa, just even thinking about, like, that last answer that you gave, it's like, is it really going to just be a two-part series, or is there, like, revisiting the contract, like the third part?
Tell me more what you mean by that.
So revisiting the contract, it's like in a relationship, just like there, like, you close the deal, like the relationship, you know, you seems to be moving from the app to the relationship, but the relationship continues on, like this sort of this you know, evolution of relationship and dating in the 21st century. It's like you kind of have to continuously, and just like any relationship, like revisit, like, are we still in agreement with what we're forming here?
Totally, I completely agree with you. I think, you know, as quote unquote hard it is to get the relationship, that's honestly the easy work. I think the real work is maintaining and keeping it. And it's really easy for us to forget to do the things that had us fall in love with the first place. And I do believe that love is, you know, if you're spiritual, a spiritual practice or a daily practice, it's the daily little things you do that can make a difference in somebody else's life that make the relationship. So I completely agree. You're constantly reevaluating the contract and the agreement and how does it work. And you're learning about yourself in the process. So, you know, a true relationship is going to show you not only the places that you're really great at, but also the places you really need to improve at. And finding somebody who's willing to do the deep dive with you and go to those places is really a profound gift. So yes, I think it's constantly changing and evolving.
So has your hacking the online dating system been successful so far? Are you dating somebody?
You know, I have a great question. There are two people that since I've utilized this that I have dated, and they've both been really profound, and they've both you know, been really great when they were there. And then, you know, for different reasons, I let them go. But yes, it has. It has. Actually, one in specific I can think of. I mean, he was just really attractive. He was like the first guy that approached me on Tinder. And I thought, this guy is so hot. I need to not be excited about it because there's obviously something wrong. So I went out with this guy.
So hot. There's got to be something wrong.
There has to be something wrong. Like, how can I be this attracted to somebody, you know, just like that sort of time? So we went out, and I even made plans afterwards. I texted my girlfriend. I'm like, hey, I've got plans. I didn't tell her what I was doing. So let's go dancing at 8:30. I'll text you. I just thought, I'm going to go, I'm going to have a good time, we're going to connect, it'll be fun, I'm just going to, you know, be really into him for the time that I'm there, and then I'm going to move on. Well, come 1, 2 a.m., and we're still talking, we're still sharing, and
And your girlfriend's texting you mad texts. Where are you? Why aren't we dancing?
No, around 8:30, I just said, sorry, you know, it turned out, this is going to take longer than I thought. I was in communication with her. I was in integrity with, you know, communicating with her. Teasing. But yeah, so.
Where are you? I'm worried.
I know. Right?
These are the messages. Success.
Yeah, you know, and again, it's just like you could look at it, oh, it failed because, you know, it didn't come into fruition and extend. But for the time
that
we dated, it was amazing.
That sounds successful to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the concept of the funnel for love is just, specifically the funnel of love, is genius. I mean, this is just so cool to take the two things that you do or that you're passionate, or I suppose the one thing that you do and one thing you're passionate about, marketing and love, and blend them together to create a systematized way of going about dating. I mean, seriously, girl, this is genius. This is awesome.
And thank you.
I would definitely say that she's passionate about marketing. Did you hear how she was talking about marketing?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
It's definitely a passion. So we're going to take a little studio break here, and we'll get right back to the conversation. If you're just tuning in, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, and we're Love in the 21st Century.
Congratulations, Mr. and Ms. Middle Class America. You're all the rage in the present presidential contest. Jeb, Hillary, and all the rest, even the Donald, say their campaigns are all about you. Well, don't look now, but after each one promises that they'll do the most for the great mass of the middle class, they disappear into the shadows and scurry off to schmooze with a little group of Americans they truly love, the super rich, who are shoveling the big bucks into nearly every presidential pretender. More than half of the huge sums of campaign cash that have been funneled so far into the secretive super PACs of the Republican candidates has come not from regular folks, but from, get this, just 130 fat cats and the corporations they run. Jeb Bush got $1 million each from 26 of his super PAC backers. Hillary Clinton took $1 million each from 9 funders. Of the $16 million in Marco Rubio's PAC, 78% came from only 4 donors. And Ted Cruz got the most from the fewest, taking practically all of his $37 million from just 3 fat cat families. So, while candidates for the highest office in our land are soaking up applause for the grand rhetoric they're giving to the middle class, they're quietly sacking up millions of dollars by pledging their steadfast fealty to the ruling class. Donating millions is not an innocent or noble political transaction. Written on the backs of their checks is their corporate agenda, trumping the people's agenda. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, it's Donnie Trump, the bombastic billionaire, who candidly admits that these so-called gifts amount to the outright plutocratic purchase of politicians. He's long been a campaign donor in order to secure financial favors, he confesses, and it works. When I need something from them, they are there for me. There's a word for that, corruption.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right, this is Love in the 21st Century, and we are talking with Lisa Kotecki about love in the 21st century, like real time, like love in the 21st century. She is the writer and producer of a play called Funnel of Love, and that's what we've been, what has been the subject of our conversation, and lots of talk about Tinder, internet dating, and marketing, and how this, these all these things sort of roll into one. So, Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the Chico News and Review and Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, presenting Chico Beer Week 2015, October 8th through the 17th. Chico Beer Week will feature breweries, bars, and restaurants hosting tap takeovers, beer food pairings, specialty releases, style nights, beer fests, and more. The Chico News and Review is hosting a kickoff party, Brew Fork, a craft beer and food truck rally on October 8th at Manzanita Place. Visit ChicoBeerWeek.net for information and a calendar of events, and like Chico Beer Week on Facebook. Sounds like it's going to be an amazing event. Go ahead and turn out for that. So, Lisa, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Awesome. So we're going to jump back into our conversation about the Funnel of Love. Emily, do you want to start off?
Sure. Yeah, I actually kind of, I am a women's self-actualization coach and relationship coach. So love is just so up my alley, as is marketing, actually, in one sense or another. So I'm curious about your character, Lisa Lovejoy. And I mean, I tried to hop right into it right away and it was just way too soon. But I'm so personally, like in my life, one of the journeys, you know, one of the many journeys that I regularly go through is coming to places within myself that aren't so black and white defined, aren't so right and wrong defined. So you know, I see the value of course, you know, making strong decisions and going with your intuition and things like that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, one path is right and one path is wrong. They're just going to be different paths. And so I know that personally, that's, you know, these two sides of myself, sort of like what you were talking about, is, you know, something that I am well aware of, the side of myself that really does kind of abide that black and white, right and wrong sort of mentality on a sort of subconscious level. And then there's the side of myself that witnesses that and tries to sort of ease into what flow there is. So, so tell me a little bit more about Lisa Lovejoy, this character that abides the sort of right and wrong, black and white mentality. And I guess just go, you know, go ahead and freestyle talk about her a little more, because I'm really curious as to, you know, what she brings.
Sure. So just to reiterate for anybody who's just tuning in, we're talking about my character Lisa Lovejoy and juxtaposing her on another character in my show that's more quote unquote me, you know, a little bit more vulnerable and open, but they're both really aspects of myself. Lisa Lovejoy, or Professor Lovejoy, speaks to a lot of things that a lot of people feel about love. And she just states them bluntly as if they're facts. I mean, Lisa just knows how things are, and they're just the way that, I'll just distinguish, Professor Lovejoy just states how things are. So, you know, in the beginning, one of the things that, she shares is, you know, this is going to feel like you're jumping off of a cliff into an abyss, and you're going to wonder, is anybody going to catch you? Well, sometimes they will and sometimes they won't. And can you imagine sitting in love school and somebody just directly telling you that, like, that straightforward? Like, how brutal is that? But at the same way, at the same time, there's a hint of truth in that, even though the delivery of how Lisa Lovejoy would say it is just so in your face. Like, look, you want this or not, because you got to jump off the cliff. But the reality is, how many of us feel like that in love? You know, it's something that so many women want and crave and want to go after. But then it does feel like you're jumping off of a cliff. Professor Lovejoy just says things really bluntly and directly. There's no filter. There's no holds barred, whatever she's thinking and feeling. She's just going to tell you how it is.
And what's Lisa's approach?
Lisa's more exploratory. Lisa's trying to figure it out. Lisa is asking some of the deeper questions, like, how do I really find this? And what has my history and past been that has got me to where I am right now? And what do I really want in the bigger scheme of things? And so, you know, she's going to love school with Professor Lovejoy to try to figure out and answer some of these deeper questions that she's grappling with.
So it sounds kind of like if you were to look at it from an Eastern philosophical type of angle, looking at yin and yang, that yin, you know, being more of the feminine, that sounds more like Lisa, and yang being more of the masculine energy, not man or woman, but rather energetically. And Lisa Lovejoy, Professor Lovejoy, is more of that sort of straightforward linear yang energy. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds really fun. So how do they interact on the play?
They don't. What happens is one part of the stage is for Lisa Lovejoy and the other part of the stage is for vulnerable Lisa, and the lighting toggles back and forth on both of them based on what scene it is.
Does Lisa as a character, is she sort of hearing the information that Professor Lovejoy is giving out and is sort of just like making her own life actions based on whatever she's moving next into?
No. Lisa's stories are pretty vulnerable. They're the kinds of things, it's so funny when you story tell, I've heard this from other storytellers, the kinds of things that you would never tell people, but all of a sudden you put yourself in front of an audience of strangers and you're willing to tell your deepest, darkest secrets. So Lisa explores the underbelly of what's driving her to speak out. I mean, the biggest question she's asking is, what do I want and why do I want this with such a drive like I do? And so she starts to unravel those questions.
Is there an element, in The Funnel of Love, are these two characters two separate, wholly separate characters, or is there an element of this is one character with these two big sides, these two definitive sides?
Just from the audience feedback, I mean, when I wrote it, it's clear it's two aspects of myself I'm exploring. So talking to the audience, they get their two aspects of myself, but the way the script is written, they're completely different characters.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not the same person.
So something that you mentioned earlier was that you learned a lot through Professor Lovejoy sort of in your life, like how you built that character has helped you to approach love and dating and, you know, your adventures on Tinder in a light and amusing sort of way. Can you maybe give us some of those insights of how that has changed for you?
Could you clarify? Are you asking what specifically changed?
Right, just some of the information that you, some of the tidbits, the insights that you gained from creating the character.
Got it. Right. Okay, so one of the things I did is I just to kind of go in the more humorous sense, and then I'll get into some of the deeper components, is I created a bell curve that I called the bell curve of opportunity, the science and art of how and when to text. And so that helped me categorize in my head how to filter out the communications I was getting online, because, you know, they're tremendous and they're numerous, and start to notice what kinds of communications really worked for me. So that's one way that the work and, you know, even being in the fun of it and the humor of it really had me sit with what are some of my values, you know, and what's important to me. In the meta, I feel like, you know, even though, she's a harsh character, I feel like what I've really learned from her is to enjoy the journey, to really be in the moment, and to stay in your joy, because I can only speak to heteronormative interactions because that's been my experience. But I think that's what really draws the opposite sex in, is when we're in our joy and in our light and we're having fun. And so, you know, with all the sort of satirical components of it, those are the three components that I really started to hone in on. And when we're fully in the moment, that's where the magic happens ultimately. You know, it's not when we're worried about how's this person going to be, are they going to be the one, you know, where's this going to go, how's it going to go, where's it going to be, and we could just fully just be in the one step that we've committed to. It just opens up a whole new world. That's what I think the biggest thing is that she taught me.
That sounds like those are some really big things that a lot of people maybe take their whole lives, if ever, to realize, you know, and I think what you're saying about it attracting the opposite sex is also what keeps the fun and amusement in relationships, is that being in the moment and not worrying about everything else that life sort of compounds upon us as living does. And so I'm really happy for you that through your experience of creating this play, you have gained these insights, and now you're actually sharing with large audiences of people, you know, and sharing with our audience right now these insights that you've gained.
Speaking of insights, I kind of have a similar question, but taken from a different angle. I suppose I should ask first, are there lessons for the audience in the play? And if there are, or is it more of an exploratory play where people walk away kind of just exploring what you presented? Or are there lessons that you have specifically kind of set up in the play for the audience to mull over once they walk away?
Great question. My approach to all of my writing is not so much to teach the audience everything, but just to be as honest as I can in my own work. Because the more honest and the more specific I am in my own story, the more likely somebody else is going to see a parallel in their own life and come to their own conclusion. So I often tell all of my storytelling friends that, you know, your work is going to change lives just by you standing up and telling your story. Because you're being honest, you're being vulnerable, you're being authentic, you're being real. You know, I don't make myself look good at all. And so that's the part where people dive in and lean in and say, oh, wow, I see your humanity and I see the places where I've done that. And it just, that's what creates the opening versus me. It's not like I'm not doing this for personal development, you know, not this show, or to have it be a learning lesson as much to have it be a fun, authentic, vulnerable sort of ride of the highs and lows of, you know, searching for this deeper experience called love and union.
I love that. I mean, that's the tactic with target marketing as well, is to be the most, you know, authentic you can be and tell your story in the most vulnerable way to speak to the audience you're going to, you know, you're wanting to call in, right?
Right, right, exactly.
I love
exactly.
It.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you talked a bit about the values and the soul searching that that writing Funnel of Love has helped you to create. Can you elaborate a bit more on that? Like how the process of writing this play helped you to see sort of how the values that you needed to be seeking out in relationship, and how that worked in with being on Tinder?
Sure. I feel like I'll just specifically hone in and on one realization I've just recently had, which for me at least, it might not sound hokey to you, but for me sounds a little hokey. And I'm coming to the conclusion that what it really all boils down to is self-love. So I'm going to back up and actually reference a study I was going to reference at the beginning. And there was research done in 1995 by two professors, one from Columbia and another from Stanford, that showed having too many choices is just as detrimental as having too few. And they demonstrated this by having a selection of jams out for free samples. And so they would toggle back and forth. And for a while, they would offer 24 flavors of samples. And then they would switch to showing 6 flavors of samples in an alternative. And what they found is that 30% of the people who had sampled only 6 flavors bought a jam, and those that had 24 flavors bought only 3%. Only 3% of the people bought, and they had 24 options. And so how this relates to online dating, because they've actually over the years done versions of this study for the speed dating world and for other kinds of subjects, is that having too many choices is just as detrimental, because our mind goes into overload. So we're given all these choices. And so one approach is like, oh, that didn't work. Well, I've got 500 other options here. But actually what I believe to be successful, you have to be really clear on like what your values are, what's important to you. And then all of a sudden the dating pool just dwindles down to practically nothing, which may sound a little bit alarming, but that's actually a good thing. you know, to have less choices, because it'll give your brain, you know, from even this research, a better chance of really making better cognitive decisions, and it'll also be a lot easier on your heart. So that's one thing I learned, or, you know, I thought about writing the process. But then after being out there a little more and thinking about, okay, what are my values? And I'll use an example. So kindness is a value of mine. Well, if I'm looking in the mirror and I'm going, God, I'm 5 pounds overweight. God, why is my hair like this today? God, I'm having an ugly day or whatever. It's going to be really hard to notice and find and attract a man who's going to be able to show me that kindness. So in the end, it really all comes down to, I believe it's really a journey in self-love, and how much more can I turn up the volume on how much I appreciate and I love myself through this journey, and just have the other human being that I'm attracting be the cherry on top, but really me be the gift through this process. And to me, that sounds so hokey, but that's the final conclusion I'm coming to as I continue to sit and write and be on this journey.
I totally agree with you. My homepage and my website says, screw romantic relationships, fall in love with you.
Yeah, and that's what the work is teaching me, is it's really about falling in love with yourself first.
Yes, absolutely.
And then, you know, you can just appreciate the other person that much more and what they can offer you.
So it sounds to me like you're working with the sort of preliminary phases of getting into relationship via your play, and yet you also have a lot of experience with the having been in deep relationship, because you're speaking as if, you know these. Oh, man, have you been in some really long, deep relationships?
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like it. The journeying that goes down in those like later years, right?
Yes. I'm a serial monogamist. So, you know, typical relationship span is about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. But no, I had one that I thought I was going to get married, and it was 5 years long, and there was a kid and tons of animals and the whole nine yards. So, wow. You know, yeah, definitely it's been in the deeper waters of love.
What I like is that you're bringing that to the earlier earlier phases of finding love in your play, because it's obvious you're speaking from a place of deeper knowing and much self-exploration.
Well, thank you. I didn't know that came across, but thank you.
Yeah, absolutely does.
So in terms of the values that you felt that you enhanced through your practice of writing the play and just self soul searching, how do you feel like they were different before? Do you think that the values were there and they just weren't as important when you were dating in the dating world, or do you feel like they were sort of being discovered as you discovered them in your play and discovered them through Tinder?
I feel like they were evolving. So I've always had a strong sense of what I do and don't like, but it's one thing just to go, oh, I'll know it when I see it, and another to really say, no, what is it really that has me drawn to this person? And it's not about them, it's really about you and understanding yourself. And that's sort of my benchmarker for a great relationship, whether it be like 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 years, 16 years, is did I get to know myself better through the process? And if the answer is yes, I would consider it a success. You know, even these past two that have happened this year, I had profound transformations in what I learned about myself and what I learned about how much I can offer. You know, I don't even mind outing myself. I mean, the thing I really got from this last relationship is I overgive. I give to the point, and I love giving. It's such a joy. When I think about my really long relationship, I miss the feeling of giving more than the feeling of getting. So I just know that's kind of how I operate. But then what it really became clear this time is I kind of overstepped the line where I give so much of myself that it's probably a little too much, and I could learn, you know, I started inquiring, why do I do that? What's the part of me that needs to give that much? And how can I give that to me and find it just as big of a joy to give myself the things that I enjoy giving other people? So, I mean, that was profound. That was like, you know, 15 years of operating a certain way that became clear in a 4-month endeavor. I mean, I would consider that a huge success.
Absolutely. And yes. Really, when you say like 4 months, it's like it was the lifetime of that practice, and then that 4 months I really put it on the spotlight, and then, you know, those last moments together were like, oh wow, like this is really what I've been doing and what keeps getting me to this result. So I really liked what you said about turning up the volume on what it is we do want, and really where it's starting with us, starting with, you know, the person that's like seeking the relationship and like seeking the companionship, that turning up the volume on, you know, what we're looking for, that kindness, that love, that beauty, that fun, the amusement, whatever you're looking for that relationship is going to give you, to look for that in yourself and turn it up, and then you're going to actually attract that towards you, because that's what people are attracted towards, the things that they're looking for.
Exactly.
So it's been such a joy talking to you, and I really want our listeners to find out more just about you and how to follow you, and not follow you like down the street or anything, but you know, like follow you online. So maybe you can give them some information on how to do that, and maybe for anybody
so
that
they
is
can stalk you.
We don't support stalking. Oh yeah, I should read this. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
We're gonna have to say that like three times through our shows here.
Yeah, definitely. So how can people find out more information about you? And definitely if they're in the Bay, what you mentioned storytelling circles and places to perform. Where would people find out more information about that?
Okay, so I'll answer both. So to find out more about me, if you go to lisalive.net, that's LISALIV, like Victor E, .net. It'll take you to my website, and then there'll be a pop-up that'll come up, I don't know, 5-10 seconds later. You can put your name and email in, and you'll be the first to know about any performances I'm doing. And I also like to, from time to time, plug in other artists I think are really brilliant in their shows. For other storytelling venues, one of my favorites is called Story Slam Oakland. And I wish I knew the URL, but just type in Story Slam Oakland. There's a great festival coming up on September 26th, Unruly Story Fest, which will be a whole entire day and lineup of nothing but storytelling. You can come watch, you can come, you know, see the community, get yourself involved, put your name in the hat for one of the storytelling venues. What's another one? The Moth is huge. So I think it's themoth.org. There are storytelling events in both Berkeley and in San Francisco. Those sell out so fast. So look at the dates. A week before the date, get online, buy a ticket ahead of time, or else you will not get a seat. Those are some of the ones that come up off the top of my head, but there is a huge, really supportive community of people just in venues for you to hear other people's stories and to start dipping your toes and telling your own.
Sounds amazing. So,
yeah.
Lisa, you gave us, you know, sort of the end result there of where it all comes down to in terms of soul searching and self-love. But for anybody that's really just about to, like, get on Tinder right now or get on OkCupid, are there any, you know, one-liners that you could give those people on how to approach their new journey?
Okay, so if I were to start from the way beginning, I would say it really comes down to you loving you. So what kind of practices do you have in place for that? Do you have a community that really loves you and supports you? Are you doing the kinds of things, like, don't wait for a man, you know? So if it's a trip you've wanted to always take and you have the money, go on the trip, you know? Do all the things that you would want to do with a partner, do it for yourself. That creates a sort of energy and vibe of you being fulfilled. And that's what's going to, you know, be a super aphrodisiac. When you go on the app, you know, you don't have to say yes to everybody. Be clear about what you want and be choosy. Even if that means waiting a little longer, to get what you want, because it'll be worth the wait. I would say if you don't know your values up front, use this as an opportunity for you to better learn about yourself and define those values. And be patient, because it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And yes, there are some cases where people go online and then the first date they end up falling in love and living, you know, they're happily ever after. But for most people. It's a journey, and it's an uncovering, and it's a discovery, and an exploration of yourself and who you truly are. And then that's when the right circumstance and situation comes into fruition.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Those sound like really good tips just for like relationships in general. So.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Cause I think that's the ultimately most important thing that anybody about to embark on a new relationship or even looking for anything should do is get to know themselves even just that much better first. It's great. Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah,
350 characters isn't very much to describe yourself on Tinder. Well. So. So you gotta be good 350.
It does.
Okay, thank you so much, Lisa. It's been a joy, and thank you. I look forward to maybe talking to you in the future about some other topics.
Likewise, thank you both so much for having me. I feel. It's been such a joy.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to come check out your show.
Yes, we will. Yeah. All right. Good
thank
night.
You. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hi. So this is Love in the 21st Century. We were talking with Lisa Kotecki about a recent play of hers, Funnel of Love. And you can find out more information. One second, I turned off Emily's mic.
You can find out more information about her play at lisalive.net, and there'll be an opportunity to subscribe to learn about when the plays are upcoming. When you go to lisalive.net, there'll be a little pop-up there. You can enter your name and email address, and I recommend you do so.
And I'm sure you could get just from the experience of an hour interview with her that she is a hilarious joy to listen to. And if I lived closer to the Bay, I'd be going to any show that she had. But you can check out some of her stuff online, and that is an option. And, you know, anytime you are in the Bay, you can do that too.
You keep turning me off over here.
I keep thinking you're done.
Well, I was just going to say we should go to the Bay together and go to her show.
Yeah. Road trip to the Bay. Road trip. All right. So I do want to let you all know about something that's coming up this weekend, Sunday, September 13th, the Chat Show, a benefit for Chico Housing Action Team and Safe Space Winter Shelter. Anybody that doesn't know what that is, it is a shelter that allows people that are staying on the street a dry and warm place during the winter months. So they are having a fundraiser this Sunday, the 13th, from 4 to 8 p.m. It's going to be out at Riparia. That's 2300 Estes Road, Chico. It's the south end of Normal, past 22nd Street. It's got an eclectic variety of music that's going to be going on. It's going to be an enjoying community time, so definitely show up for that. It seems like it's going to be a late afternoon, beautiful afternoon in Chico, and for a great cause. So if you have your Sunday, September 13th open, 4 to 8 p.m., it's going to be out at Riparia. And it looks like you can find out more information at ChicoHousingActionTeam.org. So go ahead and look them up. We're going to go out the same way we came in just because it was such a great song, and I hope that you all just really enjoyed it as much as I do.
Oh, that's awesome. I loved it.
Tell me, am I going crazy? Tell me, have I lost my mind? Am I just afraid of loving? Or am I not the loving kind? Kissing in the moonlight, movies on a late night, getting old. I've been there, done that, supposed to be high, better just go. Somebody wake up my heart, light me up, set fire to my soul, cause I can do it anymore.
Give me that cash,
too picky, honey, but I'm not in the world you're in. I'm not in it for the money. I'm here looking for the real thing. Kissing in the moonlight, movies on a late night, getting old,
tired of dreaming of no one.
I'm tired.
I need somebody.